Good morning and welcome to episode 121 of Martin Uncut. Today's date is November 23rd, 2021. Today's episode is the new podcast studio. So, again, I am not recording an episode in the studio. I am actually on a business trip to Stockholm, the capital of Sweden. And I thought this could be a good opportunity to actually sit down and record a podcast because I haven't really had time to record anything for Martin Uncut for a while and I've really, really missed it. But now there has been some time passed since I talked the last time and there's actually quite a lot to talk about. So I had to choose between a few different topics that would be, you know, roughly the right size in time. So today I have three interesting topics, and the first topic will be the new project, building a new podcasting studio, where I talk about a project that I just started, and as you understand, it's to clean up and fix a beautiful studio. The second section of today's podcast is moving away from Google. And that is thanks to my good friend Michael Dreves, who talked with me and the fellow podcasting host of the Smart Life podcast about his project moving away from Google, which kind of triggered me to do the same. So here I talk about how I did or where I am in that project now, because that is a big project. And the third section is the importance to empty your head, where I talk a little bit about why and how you can quickly and easily get things out of your head so you don't need to remember them there. I really hope you will enjoy this episode, so let's get at it. So there is a fairly big studio change coming up here, and I thought it could be interesting to talk a little bit about that. Roughly 1 year, or actually in October last year, so it's almost 14 months ago, I rented a small room to be doing some different types of video or recordings, essentially, because it was too much work to set up and dismantle the studio at home. So I rented this space where I could have my lights and stands and everything staying around or up all the time. And it was actually a quite nice place, so I was staying there quite a lot. It was nice because I could be there alone. I wasn't disturbed in any way. It was not a fantastic place when it comes to sound quality because there was these fans going on just above the roof, and there was quite a large hum from them in the room. And actually the neighboring room, if you walked in there, you could feel that the whole room was vibrating due to these fans doing ventilation mainly. And the other thing that I had a big problem with was there was a lot of echoes in the room. And I bought these foam plates to put on the wall that helped a bit, but it wasn't really super, super good. And I was sitting there for a little bit more than a month, maybe 2 months. And then the landlord came around and he said that, sorry, you cannot stay in this room anymore because you are blocking the emergency exits for the other things in the house. Because when I wasn't there, I locked the door essentially because I had my stuff in there. But he had a different room for me, just a little bit away. And I went to look at it, and it was more or less a normal office room, a little bit more big than the room I had. It was, I think, four times 3 meters, roughly. So it's not super big, but it's big enough to be a studio. So I moved in there the 1st of December last year. So that is almost exactly 1 year ago now. I think I have maybe recorded 10 movies in there, for social media mainly. But I have recorded 150 or so podcast episodes. So as you can see that, I mean, my focus area kind of shifted during this year away from making film or movies into making podcasts. And of course, there is a lot of different reasons for this. And the main reason is probably just that it's a medium that I enjoy more to work with. So now I have this room and I have these foam panels that I bought from a German company. And they kind of works. They're not super efficient, but they do their job to reduce the echo in this studio or the office I have. And I think they are roughly 2-3 centimeters thick, and they look like an egg carton on the front side, that you kind of get the feeling for how they look like. I have 20 or 30 of those, pretty big ones. So they cover one full walls, and I have a few in the roof and so on as well. So that is what I've done to sound treat the room. And of course, I have furniture in there. I have carpet on the floor and window blinds on the windows to dampen reflections from the plain surfaces, essentially. And in here, I also have all my recording equipment then, and right now it is one Shure SM7B microphone that is on a Rode PSA-1 stand or a boom arm. And that is a really good setup. I really like that because it is, you can put it in essentially whatever placement or situation that you want. I also have a Rode PodMic. And that is also hooked up to a Rode PSA-1. And both of these mics, they are stationary, connected to my Rodecaster Pro, which is essentially the mixer that I am using on a day-to-day basis. If you are interested in my setup more detailed, let me know, and I can definitely talk about that. But that is kind of the setup I have today. And what I've realized is that I have this fairly big office and I use half of it. It's not really optimal for doing podcast recordings because of its layout or its design. So what I did was that I had a chat with my landlord because I'd been there for a year. And I talked about my challenge, and he just offered me the option or the situation that I could actually split this room into two smaller rooms with a small door in between. And when I was thinking about that solution for a while, that was actually something that was really, really good. So I decided to go along with that and actually continue setting that up as a project. So that wall will fairly soon be built in, so essentially splitting my room into two rooms. The inner room will continue to be my office where I'm doing my day-to-day, my work that I do every day. But the first room is going to be my podcast studio. So in here, I'm going to, of course, fix a lot better sound absorption on the walls. And I'm going to build those myself. So essentially, it is a little bit of wood you need for a frame, and you need insulation. And there is a lot of different type of insulation that you can use for this. And essentially, there is the glass fiber, and there is the mineral fiber that you use for insulations when you're building house. And if you look at the sound absorption properties, the glass fiber is the most efficient one. Of course, if you do build these yourself, you should find glass fiber insulation with as high density as possible, because then it will absorb even more sound. So essentially, build a frame with wood, put the insulation in the middle, and cover the insulation with something that looks good. It can be a piece of cloth, and in my case, it will be different type of cloths with different colors that is matching the color of the podcast studio. And I will also have a piece of cloth printed with the logotype of the studio and hang that up on a wall, because I think that will look fantastic. And hopefully these absorption panels will then work even better than the ones I bought from Germany, just thinking about it and seeing a different type of reviews on YouTube for other ones that has built insulation panels like this, it's going to be really, really effective. So I'm going to definitely talk more about this in the future when I have built a few and tried it out. And looking at the material cost, you will get a lot of these panels for the same panels or for the same price as the foam panels that you buy from Amazon or from Germany. And the price will be a lot, or the sound absorption qualities will be a lot higher. And of course, you can get them in whatever size you need and whatever color and so that you would like. So I will put these absorption panels then on the walls and also in the roof. And I already have a carpet for the floor. So in this podcast studio, I will also have a round table that is also already in place, actually. And on this table, I will place the Rodecaster and the two mics I have, plus two additional mics. And this will be a fixed setup. So whenever I want to record, I should just be able to go there and record with me plus three guests as max. So that's going to be really interesting to do. And it's also going to be a fantastic project to do. The thing I have decided to do with this project is to have the Shure SM7B and then upcoming three pod mics. And these are all dynamic microphones, which means that they are not as sensitive as other microphones, which is also a property that is good when you are in a studio environment where you may sometimes get, you know, some background sound or a little bit of echo, and these microphones will then be less resilient to, or more resilient to that kind of noise, which would probably give a little bit better sound quality. And one of the reasons I am doing this is, of course, that I want to have a really professional studio that I can do really good recordings in. But I also want to have the opportunity to actually rent this space out for other people that want to do their podcasts. So this is something that's going to go out on the market pretty soon. I think the studio will be completely done in the end of January, depending on how long time it will take to build the wall and paint it and, you know, custom make all of these absorption panels and have these printed and things like that. But I'm quite motivated, and it's a really fun project that I have to work with here on the side. So I'm definitely going to give you an update here on this podcast about this going forward. And as of this recording, I have actually gotten a few suggestions for a logotype for the studio. And a few of them are actually pretty good. So it's going to be really hard to choose which one I want to use. But it's you know, a traditional podcasting symbol with a microphone and or a sound wave or headphones. You know, I don't want to say too much yet, but it's a professional has made it for me, and this is going to be used then in the studio to kind of symbolize that it's a professional studio. And also on upcoming websites and so on, I'm going to use this logotype to kind of give a brand for the studio. Also, I am having some plans of potentially starting yet another podcast, because, you know, who can have enough podcasts? It's so fun to do. And in this case, it's going to be a podcast then in Swedish, and it's going to be a podcast about the local community, essentially. And the reason I want to do this podcast about the local community is I have been living here for, I think, 15, 16 years now. Quite a long time, but I still find new things on an ongoing basis around this place or this town. You know, it could be companies I didn't know was there. And of course, companies, they come and go as time passed by. But there is also different type of clubs, like sport clubs and other special interests clubs. And some of these has been around for a very, very long time. And I just find and hear about them right now. And all of the clubs that are around, I mean, they probably do a lot of good things, but I don't know too much about them. So I think that could be really interesting for the local community to learn more about these different local organizations. And of course, this is then a podcast that I will spend time on from time to time, and I will batch do these. I will essentially do a lot of podcast episode over a very short time and then release them over a longer time. So I will work on it, not continuously, but like every quarter or every half year, I will do a big batch recording of different shows for this podcast. So that is something that I have in mind. I haven't really decided if I want to do it yet or not, because it's not like I don't have enough on my plate already. But it would be an interesting project. So the new project I started up this week actually was to start working on this new podcast studio. So if you're interested in how that goes and what I figure out during the way, just subscribe to the podcast and you will learn more. Moving away from Google. A few weeks ago on the Smart Data podcast, me and Michael and Jens, we were talking about Michael's journey away from Google. And you will actually be able to listen to that episode in a little bit. I think it will come out in roughly a week or two. And it's definitely going to be an interesting discussion around the exit of Google. But during this discussion with Michael and Jens, I kind of got reminded of a blog post I wrote back in 2019. And I called it Ungoogling the Blog. And it was essentially the journey I took to remove as much Google influence away from my blog so that my users' privacy was protected as much as possible. And in this journey, a few things that I did was, one, remove the Google Analytics from the site so I could analyze statistics differently. Currently, I analyze statistics on the website by just, you know, parsing the web service logs, and the things I get out is essentially just the number of visitors, and that is the number that is interesting for me. I am not doing any type of ads or things like that, so I don't really care about who the person is. It's more like which articles podcast episodes are the ones that are being mostly downloaded or read. So I know what type of contents that are interesting to my visitors. I also removed all types of fonts, Google fonts. I still use Google fonts, but they are all locally served from my website. So Google will not know that you download a font if you get to my webpage. So I protected you as much as I can as a visitor on my website. At this time, I also started to look around and limited my use of social media. So I stopped to use Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn and these different kind of social medias as much as I could, because these are living on essentially the visitors. There is a saying, I think Michael told me, that if there is no price, if the product is free, you are the product. So essentially they are selling your attention to advertisers in one way or another. And as an entrepreneur, I kind of understand that people need to make money. But as a person, I also want to be kind of in control over what people know and what they throw at me, so I actually can be observant on that. So I, back when I did Google the blog, I also created a new email account on a German email provider called Tutanota. And I believe Tutanota means encrypted note or something like that in Latin. So it's a heavily encrypted web service. So if the emails are in there, no one will be able to scan them and read them. No one at the Tutanota team either. So it's only me. But they have a very, very locked down system. So that means I cannot connect to this service using any external web clients or email clients. And that is a little bit annoying, actually. And the other problem with this email service is that they give me an email address on their domain. So that means I cannot move that around. So if I want to move out from tuta nota, I cannot. That is locked in there. And it's also a little bit painful to export data from there. So even though tuta nota is a fantastic service, it's encrypted and they do really good stuff, they kind of lock you in a little bit of in a sense. So be a little bit careful if you go in there. I can definitely recommend it still, but think about these things before you jump on it. After the discussion with Michael, I decided that I want to limit my usage of Google going forward. And not only Google, also all the other social media platforms that are selling me to advertisers. So I have started to move away from Google into a lot of other places. So email is a real cornerstone that I'm using at Google. And at the start of this, I had, I think, 4 or 5 Google accounts. I still have most of them around, but they're going to go down a lot. But if I, as a person in the 2021, I need an email address, right? I need an account somewhere. So I went the same direction that Michael did and chose to use ProtonMail because it is a really nice application, a really nice interface, but you can still hook it on to your normal email clients. So you can use Apple Mail if you want. You can use AirMail. You can use all of these different things through a small application to keep everything yet encrypted. And that is a fantastic thing. And I really, really enjoy working with ProtonMail's web interface after been using it for a while. So it's a great experience. What I've done so far is that I have migrated one of my Google accounts in. And I took one that is still an important account because it's one of my business addresses, but it was an easy account because I didn't have too much hooked up to it. So it was kind of a test migration. I had around 700 emails in the system. And in this case, I chose to actually migrate them all into ProtonMail. And they have a function to do this that works very, very similar to Google's way of doing this. So essentially, you apply or you provide the credentials for your old email service provider, and it sucks in all the emails. And in this case, it also sucks in all the labels. So I got a structure that was, well, I recognized it and I found everything where I expected it to do. So these 700 emails, it took roughly 1 hour to import, and that it can be a good kind of pointer. So depending on how much email you have in your account, it can take from a short time to a very, very, very long time to import. So think about that if you go down this route and want to migrate your data from, let's say, Google to Proton. But I assume that this is a little bit of a Proton limit, or it slows it down so it doesn't get blacklisted by Google. I guess that is why. Right now, I think I have 3 domains connected to my Proton account, and there will be a few more, but I only have 1 user. And when I'm done, I actually only gonna have 1 user. So all the email I get from all the different domains I have will come to into the same account. And that is really, really nice. I will, of course, have more users because I have given away some user accounts to my family members. And that is one of the things that makes this one of the migrations of one of these accounts a little bit harder. And I will come to that in just a second. So what you need to do when you do a migration is that you need to, of course, set the users up first in your ProtonMail account. And for the domain I migrated from Google, I only had 1 user, so that was fairly simple. That was my user. And then you need to go into your DNS, and ProtonMail has a fantastic wizard for this. So you just go into the domains tab and follow what they tell you to do. But you need to do is you need to add what they call a validation. So essentially you add a number into your DNS telling ProtonMail that, yes, this is a domain that I own. And I don't know why you need to keep this in your DNS afterwards. You need, I deleted it, and then ProtonMail starts to complain. So you need to have it and keep it in there, which I think is a little bit stupid, because the only thing it actually does is that it verifies that you are the owner of the DNS or has a control over the DNS, at least. When you've done that, you can point the or move the MX pointer, so the mail exchange pointer in your DNS, to point to ProtonMail, and they will tell you exactly how to do this. And when you've done that, your mail will actually start to flow into ProtonMail. That's how easy it is to do this. And they also help you to set up things like SPF and DKIM and DMARC. And all of these three standards I just mentioned, they are all different protocols or standards that is helping you to limit the amount of spam that will be sent from your domain. And that is good. So use SPF, DKIM, and DMARC if you can. That is really good things for you and for everyone else. And when I had done that, I needed to import my email, and I used the ProtonMail imports, and I got all the emails, and I got the labels as well from Gmail, which I think is fantastically good. So the upcoming domain that I will migrate in, it's a little bit more complicated, because this is a domain I have had in Gmail since I think 2009, and it's been my main email for periods of time in my life. And that means that I need to be a little bit careful when I move it. And it's also so that there is a few family members that has gotten email addresses on this domain. So I need not only to migrate my own things, I also need to help them to migrate their things and hopefully not break anything that they have connected to their Google account. So that is something that is a little bit more tricky. And just to be point the maybe the obvious out here, I'm not only out to migrate away from Gmail. My goal here is to actually delete or remove the Google account so that Google don't have that knowledge about me anymore. Then I don't know how much of my data they actually store. They probably have a lot of it on my profile anyway, but they will not get more. And that is what I think is important for me. So email is pretty easy to move over from this other account. I think I have 9,000 emails or 19,000 emails. It doesn't really matter how many emails, but it's a lot. So the migration process will take hours and hours to do. So I decided to not migrate my emails. But on the same time, I don't want to lose them because there may be emails in there that I may need in the future. There could be things like serial numbers for software, or email addresses to old contacts and things like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to export all the emails using Google's export feature, actually. And it will give you the email in a format called mbox. And mbox is an old format that's been around for a long, long time. So it's that's very promising. I think Unix used it to store the old-fashioned email inboxes in that format. So getting the email out in that way is a good way, because you will definitely be able to use it. And you can always import that data into other applications, such as Apple Mail, for example, with their import wizard. So it's a good format to get the email in. I will also, of course, import my calendar. And that's fairly easy to do into ProtonMail. You get a big CSV file or ICS file or something like that, and you just import it, and it just works. I tried it with the small domain I migrated, and that worked perfectly fine. So I'm going to do the same thing for the big domain. And the same goes for contacts. There is a contact database in Proton, and you will get that over in very much the same way. But then the problematic thing comes. So on Google, I also have other services that I use on a quite often basis. And these are things like YouTube. I have a YouTube channel with my big follower base. I think it's 4 people following me there, so it's fantastic. But I don't want to lose, I don't really care about the channel as such, but I don't want to lose the videos. I will need to review what I have there and see if I have the original files. Otherwise, I'll need to download the files and store them somewhere else. And then the next step is to try to find another service to host videos, because sometimes I create videos that I embed on websites, and YouTube is really good at doing that. But if I don't have a YouTube channel, that's going to be hard, right, to do anymore. There's also other services like podcasts, for example. And there's a long, long list of different services that is on Google that you may need to move. So if you're going to do this, this transfer or move away from Google, go through the list of the different applications you have. And the way I think is good to do this is to go into your Google account, and they have the takeout service, and that is the export thing they have. And just go through which services that you have in that list and think about, okay, do I need this data? And so is the export format correct? Does that work for me? And how will I do if I need to do anything with this in the future? So that is something you should take into consideration. And as it looks now, I'm going to do the migration of that big account in a couple of weeks. So if I vanish from the surface of the earth, you know that my migration didn't work. And when that migration is done, I will have all of my real accounts into my Proton email. I will have one Google email account left that is for one of the companies that I can't control or move away from. And I will have 2 or 3 Outlook accounts also for different work things. And it's a little bit of a pain because you can't really get a unified inbox for all of this mail. So that is a little bit what I'm working on right now when it comes to Google and email and getting out of that space. The importance of emptying your head. So the last section of today's episode, I was thinking about giving you a little bit of advice around your personal productivity. So for a while ago, I was in Italy to a wedding. And during this wedding, there was a couple of things that really hit me. So when you're traveling to new places to things or places and meet people that you're not usually meeting, you get bombarded with a lot of new impressions. And of course, this doesn't have to be on a travel or a business trip somewhere. It can be when you're meeting people or when you exercise or when you're having a hobby or doing anything a little bit out of the normal. That will trigger different places of your brain. And that means that you will see similarities and patterns. And essentially, it will make you help you be more creative. So that means that you will, get new thoughts, get new ideas, remember things. And the thing is, we don't have room in our heads to actually keep it there. So when we have this opportunity or this chance to get all of these ideas and things, let's just capture them. So there was this researcher back in, I think, in the 1950s or maybe in the beginning of the 60s. And his name was George A. Miller, and he was working at Harvard University in the US. And he wrote a very famous article called The Magical Number 7, Plus or Minus 2. And during his research, he looked into how our short-term memory worked. And he came to the conclusion that we can remember around 7 things, plus or minus 2. So that is the golden number. Later research, though, has kind of given us a different number, and I don't know why. I think it's because our reality is changing. I think it's my point on this is that it's because our attention span is also going down, probably caused by social media again. So the current number is 4 plus minus 2. So that means if you get all of these impressions, you get all of these ideas, you can't keep them in the head because you can only keep four things at a time. And when we say four things, it doesn't mean that you forget things forever. It's just that you cannot bring them out by will, or you can't bring them out by will easily. So if you have more than four things, and most people have, you need to capture things outside the house. So these other things you have, the things that you will kind of push out from your memory, they will come back, but they will usually come back in places or in times where you can't use them or can't do anything with them. So, you know, I don't know how many of you come up with good ideas in the shower. I am one of those that have solved a lot of programming issues in the shower. So then I need to come out and actually store them somewhere as fast as possible, because otherwise they will be gone. And you know, when the power goes out, you realize that the batteries in the flashlight are out. And of course, you didn't remember that those flashlights were battery were out when you were in the store in front of the batteries. That is just how your brain works. So when you get the ideas, you need to capture them fast or you will lose them fast. So create a habit so you can quickly capture things and keep them outside of your head. So there are devices and tools, strategies that you can use easily to help you with this. And one thing, and then I mean the old-fashioned way that still works fantastically well, is to work with pen and paper. This is the way I usually capture things, mainly when I'm at home or in the office, because I always have paper around. So then I just write on the paper, and it can just be a short thing, so I remember it, that I had this idea. I also have a note taker wallet, which is, it's a wallet you have in your pocket. You can put your credit cards in there, but there is also a small piece of paper where you can quickly write down your ideas. And there is also a small pen, so you always have pen and paper available. But what I use quite often when I'm out of the office is actually either the iPhone voice recorder, because I always have my phone with me, and it's so easy to just take the phone up and just talk into the voice recorder. So that's something I review often to see what recordings I have in there. And it's a standard app, so it's always there and doesn't cost anything extra. Sometimes, of course, I also just write straight into OmniFocus, which is my list manager. But sometimes that just takes a little bit too long, or it's a little bit too cumbersome, and then I just talk. The third alternative I have on my phone that I use quite often is a small application called Drafts. And you can actually talk into this application as well, and it turns your voice into text. And then you can put that everywhere you want with what's called actions in this application. And one action can be to push something to OmniFocus, for example, but I can also push it to my other applications, such as Obsidian or whatever you want to do with it. So it's easy, easy, easy to capture and then put things into the right place for later processing. So the tip of today, or the tip of this podcast, is to make sure to capture the ideas you have, and don't trust your head. It's an awful office. Then when you have captured it, it's fine. Then you can relax. But you will need to come back to these notes and decide what it means to you, and if so, what you want to do with it. So that was the final tip of today's podcast. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Martin Uncut. It was fantastically fun to do this, since I haven't been recording a podcast for a while. I cannot promise when the next episode will come out, but I hope and will do my best to actually come out with a podcast in a few weeks. It's a lot to do, as you probably understood, but I really, really enjoy doing this podcast, because it's a space and a place where I can actually talk about whatever I want to. And usually that's about tech and quirky projects. So until next time, have a fantastic time. Ciao, ciao.
Martin Uncut, your daily technology dose.